Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
Many years ago, I came across an excerpt of Gail Sheehy's book, Sex and the Seasoned Woman, in Parade magazine. And what she was talking about was, this book was talking to women in their 50s and 60s who basically had decided that it was now their time. They were done raising kids, they were done dealing with their husbands, and now it was all about them. And I read this and I thought, it should always have been about you. And not just about you, but you should have always been included in the equation. And this is a common theme that I hear all the time from women in my office, from my friends, from people that, you know, I meet in a business setting. And, you know, and it was even true, I think, of my own mom. I think my mom really kind of put her life aside when she became, well, I know she left college when she married my father. And so she kind of put her own life aside. And, you know, I have two kids. I understand how important it is to be a good mom. I've been married for almost 30 years. I love my husband. You know, he's important to me, and I do things sometimes just because it will make him happy. But I remember when we first got together, I've danced on and off all my life. And when he and I got together, I told him, I said to him, I said, please never ask me to give up dancing. Because if you do, you will not like the woman you're living with. And it really wasn't a request. It was kind of almost more, well, a little bit of a threat, not exactly. But it was taking a stand for something that was important to me. And even though I don't dance as often now as I did when we got married, I still go to dance class once a week because it's my mental health activity. So one of the things that I don't get is, why do women, and it's almost always women, think that they need to stop being who they are up to the point where they lose themselves as they become wives and mothers? And so to help me answer that question, I've invited Donna Internicola, the founder of Internicola Coaching and a mom's coach who works with overwhelmed moms who feel stuck, and empty nest moms who ask what's next. So Donna, thank you for joining me, because I think this is pervasive and a really important thing we need to address.
Thank you for having me. This is going to be quite a pleasure. I've enjoyed speaking to you, so thank you.
So you work with moms and empty nest people. And, you know, I'm now empty nest. My daughter came home last weekend, but pretty much my kids are gone. Why is it that you see women struggling so much to hold on to who they are?
Seems that they hold on, sometimes they don't even know who they are to begin with. They like to fit in, they often fit into the role models of what they grew up with, of their history. They fit into what they believe that society says they should be. Sometimes they think, they just don't even know themselves. They have no idea of who they are and where they're coming from, so they're trying to fit into all these should categories because sort of trying them on. You know, a mom should behave this way,
yes,
or a person of this age should be that way, or whatever.
yes, the shoulds. I've often said that my least favorite word in the English language is the word should, and if I could abolish it, I would. Because to me, should is just somebody else, the great they, whoever they are, telling me what my life should look like.
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly it. So you have all these unknown people that are telling you what you should be like, and you're thinking, huh? But you don't think, huh? Instead, you try to fit into the mold.
Well, and I think that's one of the challenges, and I've said this many, many times, and if they're listening, which I doubt they are, but if my two college boyfriends are listening, I just want to thank them for not proposing to me. Because if I had married either one of them, I probably would have fit exactly into this mold of, here's the role I'm supposed to step into, even if it didn't feel very comfortable. Right. So, you know, I mean, and I'm grateful. I always look back at my 19-year-old self and go, oh, my gosh, you just were just so incredibly stupid. And thank goodness I didn't do anything, you know, lifelong to at that point in my life. But what is it that makes it so difficult, if, for young women especially, to not just kind of follow what the guy wants to do?
They're often afraid. There's a lot of fear that's involved with these things. There could be, again, it could be historical that they have a fear of not being enough, not being good enough or smart enough, or not being, you know, what they have a fear that their authentic self, the person that they are meant to be, the person that they are deep inside, is not the person that will hold on to and nurture a relationship with somebody. So they try to fit in, and they try to be everything else that they believe they should be instead of being who they are. They're afraid. They're afraid, again, they kind of go back, I'm kind of repeating myself here, but they're afraid of a lot of things, of rejection, of failure, of not wanting to be something that is not appreciated, I guess.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because it's somewhat similar to when you have teenagers and they all are expressing their individuality, yet they all look exactly the same because they don't want to step too far out of what's acceptable in their group. So is there an age where women, other than in like Gail Sheehy's book, the 50s or the 60s, is there an age before that when people, women especially, can feel more comfortable claiming who they are?
It all comes from knowing yourself. There's a quote from Aristotle that says, knowing yourself is the beginning of all wisdom. So once you are able to clearly understand you yourself, your values, your needs, what's most important to you, and you live from that place of authenticity regardless of what the outside world says, that's when it all starts to come into place. And that could be done at any age, whether it's, you know, it has to do with emotional intelligence, what you know about yourself. So if you could be in your 20s, you know, some people might have it in their teens. I don't know. I don't know too many like that, but it can happen. But it could be the 20s. It could be 30s. Any age. But it is all about knowing yourself, regardless of what your age is.
So what does it truly mean to know yourself?
To know yourself is to be able to really get into it and explore, what are my values? What is the most important thing to me, the non-negotiables? What are those things that if I lose this, I'm not going to be the same person? There are a lot of symptoms that come up about that, and we can talk about that in a few minutes. But it's just a matter of really understanding what your values are, because we are value-driven.
Right. But what is a value? I mean, what kinds of things constitute value?
Those things that are what gets you through every day. Richard Bowles, in What Color Is Your Parachute, said, values are a matter of what guides you through every day, every task, every encounter with another human being. As I said, they're the non-negotiable. They're those things that you really, really, they make you who you are. I mean, when I work with my clients, so one of the first questions I ask them is, what did you want to be when you were a little kid? Or if they don't know what that is, I said, well, what toy was most important to you? Or what, you know, I kind of explore that, because those values are something that is ingrained in you and they stay with you throughout your life. I mean, they can change a little this way or that way, but if you, you know, what's important to you? What is it? What is the core essence of what makes you who you are? That's basically what the values are.
But how do we know whether it's my value or whether it's somebody else's value?
What happens is that there are a lot of signs. When you're not in alignment with who you are, then you have symptoms and signs. And some of those symptoms and signs, like you might go and you might say, oh, my gosh, I'm so fat, or I'm so stupid, or I'm so this, or I'm so that. And when you're doing that, who says so? And if you're being critical of yourself, those are
great
inside voices. That's a great thing. Yeah, exactly.
Well, or it could be your mother or a boyfriend or your spouse or your kids. I mean, how do we, you know, I talk a lot about marriage being that necessity, that in order to be in a successful marriage, you have to first be comfortable in your own skin, because we have to have deal breakers, things that, and I think it goes to what you were talking about with values, things that we aren't going to accept in our lives. You know, with, or things we want to have in our lives, because it could be either one. But but isn't that where the fear factor kind of comes in? Because if I stand in my authenticity, if I stand in who I am, like I did when I told my husband, "Don't ask me to quit dancing," then isn't that kind of scary? He could say no.
And on the other hand, he could say, okay. Can I tell you a little story? Can I tell you a little story
here?
All right. I was married. I've been divorced about 6 years now, and I was married for 28 years. And it was peaceful and amicable, and I won't get into all the details. But basically, we grew apart. And when my kids were little, I lost myself, and I just totally, I remember I used to love art. I used to love hiking through the woods. I used to like to, I loved really different styles of music and everything else. And when I got married, I settled into this area of being what I should be according to my mother's expectations, my husband's expectations, you know, what you read in magazines about the perfect, you know, beaver cleaver wife, I guess. I don't know.
but it didn't work out that way.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it didn't work that way. And I found that over time, I was just trying and trying and trying to fit into this mold and fit into this mold and fit into this mold. And actually, my husband started getting depressed. Now, I'm not taking responsibility for that, but these are some of the other signs. My whole family was, we were doing okay on the surface, but underneath there was something that was not right. It was something out of order. I know that in myself, I was having a lot of anxiety. I was having a lot of discomfort, and I didn't know who I was. I kept thinking, what's wrong with me? I'm miserable. I have to, you know, I remember thinking, oh, my gosh, I should go back to school and take philosophy. Or, you know, I didn't
well,
know what
I
to
think,
do.
I think what you're saying, though, is really important, and I don't know how much we encourage women and people in general to pay really close attention to, does what I'm doing fit with me? Am I comfortable with it? Am I not anxious? I mean, it was really funny because I was just having this conversation with my husband just the other day, and you know, my kids are growing up, and I'm thrilled. I mean, I love watching them become these wonderful people, and I'm not anxious about them. Now, when they're on the road and they're traveling, it's like, yes, please let me know you're okay. That's about the only place my anxiety shows up, and I'm going, how is it that I'm not this anxiety-driven person? I don't get it.
It seems to me that you know yourself, and that's what makes the difference. You understand. Sometimes you have to release that other people's stuff is their stuff. It's not your stuff.
Right.
That's part of it. But also it's realizing, it's recognizing those symptoms of anxiety and being able to recognize, again, it has to do with emotional awareness, recognizing where these things are coming from up front. So, for example, if somebody's an emotional eater, and they just do it, go through the motions of eating whenever they, and saying, yeah, that's just how I am. Well, not necessarily. That may not be, but that's a symptom of something else going on. And you have to dig deeper and discover, what is it that's actually the issue here? Or, you know, any kind of a thing, spending, you know, what is it, retail therapy? It's a huge one.
Right, right.
You know, people that
go
to excesses on that. Yeah, excesses
right.
on that. I mean, that those are all symptoms that there is something out of alignment. You're trying to fill this void, this hole in you with whatever you can without getting to the root of the problem. I guess that's the essence.
Okay. All right, now I'm going to step onto some dangerous territory here. Do you think that women do this a lot with their children, that I don't want to say self-medicate with their, like they might self-medicate with food or shopping, but to lose ourselves in our children?
That easily can happen when you know, there's the term helicopter parents, where the parents are just hovering and hovering and hovering all the time without giving the kid any sense of autonomy, without giving the child choices. And sometimes we do that because that's how we were raised. And again, that's mm-hmm. not our authentic self. That comes back from our history, our past.
Yeah, but throwing that off can be really hard. I mean, right now we're living in this child-centric culture, and please, I love my kids. I mean, they're great. They're great. But this child-centric culture where if my child isn't happy 100% of the time, I'm failing as a parent. And so I have to sacrifice myself. I mean, this is something I hear repeatedly in my office from mostly women who say, if I do anything for myself, I'm being selfish. And I've got their husbands going, I keep telling her, go out with your friends, take a class, do something. And so they have the support. They're not fighting their partners. But it's like, then I won't be there for my child. And I'm going, okay, is your child alone or what? I mean, you know, so what is that about?
I like to say that sometimes it depends on the circumstance. For example, when my son was an infant, I nursed my children for a long time. And I remember that there was an opportunity to take a beautiful trip with my husband to Vancouver, Canada, because I was living on the other side of the country, all expenses paid. But my baby was still my baby, and he wasn't mm-hmm. ready to give it up. I wasn't ready to give up. And so my husband went on that trip without me, which was, he said, I'm not even going to ask because I know it's important. And it was, because this child was an infant, he's only going to be a baby once. It depends on the circumstance, sort of. If we can make it up and do other trips, which we did down the line, that's a different story. Mm-hmm. Or it depends, and it also depends on the age, you know, I guess in essence, it
right.
depends on the age of the child, how much you
sure.
give to those children. Once they're able to, well, I remember sending them to preschool. Once they were able to be 2 1/2 and potty trained, and tell me, and once I trusted that they were able to say something was wrong, then I felt comfortable mm-hmm. letting them go. And then I was able to go back to school or do whatever I needed to do. And
which is great, but I've actually had couples who have never gone out alone and their kids are 7 or 8 years old. And that's where I think maybe some of this gets caught because we get into the habit. I mean, you know, I tell people it's what, 60 to 90 days for a new behavior to become a habit. And I don't
yes.
care how precocious your children are. At 90 days old, they can't take care of themselves.
Yes.
So,
and in that sense, it's not, in that sense, it's not healthy for the child to be hovering like that because children need to learn to be a little.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need to learn independence in graduated stages. So when they're
right.
little tiny toddlers, they need to be able to make choices on a daily basis about maybe what outfit do they want to wear or, you know, little things like that.
Right.
As they grow older,
right.
they need to have choices. They need to be able to face the difficult emotions as well. They don't. This kind of addresses what you were saying about wanting children, you know, some parents wanting the children to be happy all the time. No. No, happiness is great,
right.
but happiness is not the only emotion. We need the whole gamut of emotion to understand
right.
what it is to live. And without learning about that from an early stage, those children are going to grow up impaired adults who don't know how
exactly.
to deal with those emotions.
So this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net, and I'm Leslie Dorey. I'm talking today with Donna Internicola, certified professional coach who works with women on finding balance so they can fully live the life that they deserve. And in line with that goal, I want to share one of my key strategies for a successful marriage. Know who you are and what you need, because marriage is a partnership, and you need to be able to honor who you are. Because if you can't, no one else is going to. So if you need help with that, take a moment right now and send me an email or give me a call. I offer a no-obligation consultation. identify ways you can create the kick-ass marriage you've always wanted. So email me, Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationcoachingnc.com. That's foundations, F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coachingnc.com. Or call me at 919-924-0463. Again, that's 919-924-0463. And now back to this wonderful discussion with Donna about women and how they can claim their authentic selves throughout their lives. So, I mean, I know empty nest is a real big time because it's a major life change, as is when we have children. That's a major life change. So what is it that you suggest that women do to hold on, to first off identify who they are and then hold on to that throughout all the challenges that life throws at us?
Mm-hmm. Let me just say this. Sometimes when a client comes to me to work with me, they'll say, I usually have them do this little assessment inventory of, that I've developed or created, and it's just basically identifying your values, your passions, your interests, and figuring out who am I. And so when you do this self-discovery exploration, it gives the client a clearer idea and me a clearer idea of who you are. It gives us a baseline, which is not a right or wrong answer, it just is. But what we do from that is, and sometimes a client will come and they'll say, well, do you want to know what I did? And I'll say, I don't care what you did. I want to know who you are. And that's where this type of assessment comes in. They'll say, you know, I want to do something in the future. I had one woman who had been in, she worked as a call center for first responders, I believe. And she was always doing crisis management. And she said, well, this is what I do. And I was thinking of doing some volunteer work. And I said, why? I said, it sounds like you have enough crisis in your life. Wouldn't you like to relax? What do you love? And we started exploring her and what she really loved. And she came up with a whole different idea. I'm like, oh, yeah. And started opening doors in different directions. That's usually what happens. When you begin to know yourself and really identify those things, your whole life will change. And that's a pretty amazing process when that happens. But people come in with a preconceived idea of, well, this is who I've been, this is what I've done, and they identify themselves by their line of work rather than who they are.
Right. That's very male too. After their name, they tell you what they do, which is like, no, that's not who you are. That's what you do for a living. But isn't that? I mean, for me, when you say that, I have two reactions. I have absolute terror and then a sense of absolute weightlessness. Wow, I can do all this. I can do this. And oh, my God, isn't that so scary? Sorry.
Oh, I see. That's kind of the terror is like, I can't do that. Well, that's your inside voice coming out again saying, it's the fear. It's that fear factor that you've had since you were probably a little kid or since, you know, whenever. It's terror. It's fear of the unknown. Sometimes when we're in something, the known, as miserable as it could be or as blah as it could be, is safer than the unknown. But it's taking that first step, and that's again, what we do is I work with people and women, and I help them take little baby steps that they figure out themselves. I don't tell anybody anything. I just help them figure it out. And they take
you help them. You help them peel the layers out off the onion, right?
Exactly. And so they figure it out and take the step, and it's empowering. Every step you take is more empowering than the previous one, until finally you're saying, "Yeah, I can do this. You know, this is cool. You know, or I've done this. Better yet, and you look back and you say, "Wow, look at where I've got, what I've accomplished," and you keep on going.
And there's a little nagging voice in the back of my head, actually. It's sitting in the corner chair in my office about this woman who's saying to me, but my husband won't let me, or my husband won't like it, or my kids won't be happy. What do you say to that woman?
I say, if it's this important to you, you have that conversation with them and you mention how important, how key this is to you. You find a way to stay within your values. what is there that you are afraid of? There's got to be something more that you are afraid of other than, why won't your husband like this? Like, for example, if you want to go and, say you've been a stay-at-home mom, and you want to go and get a part-time job. And believe me, I know this route because I've been there. I was there years ago, and I remember my husband and I followed his career around the country through 10 states, so I've been there. And I remember saying tentatively, oh my gosh, do you think I could go get a part-time job? Here I am asking permission, and I'm thinking, now I look back and I say, where'd that come from? You know? But that came back from my upbringing. It came back from, you know, just the fear of, well, okay, again, it came from fear of losing and displeasing another person. But in the process, I was unhappy myself. And that's the thing. You have to go.
Displeasing yourself.
I was losing. I was not worth it. I did not believe that I was afraid to lose the relationship. And so I was saying, okay, I'm second rate. I don't count. And what anybody else says, that's okay. I'll go with it. And I was very compliant. You know, I look back, I go, wow. Anyway.
Right. And I think people do this, and I think that this is where women get themselves into trouble because they think it's coming from someplace else, their husband, their mother, their child, whatever. And I realize, but it's an internal dialogue. And what I've run into is if you don't actually bring it up to the other person in your life, then they're going to think everything's okay. And this is what I see, because the guys a lot of times I deal with, they're thinking everything's fine. They don't know that their wives are really unhappy because they haven't said anything. And the guys would actually be very willing to be supportive, say, of their wives going back to work or doing something brings joy to them, but they just think everything's okay because it's being agreed.
Well, exactly. And there was a person that I knew, a man that I had known one time, who came to me, and I don't work with men, so I just briefly spoke with him, but I said, you know, he said, well, my wife just, you know, she just sits around and all she does is watch TV. And I said, I'm not going to diagnose because I don't do that, but it sounds like she's got some pretty heavy depression going on. I said, can you get her to go see somebody? And he said, oh, I don't know. I'm just thinking about divorce. And I'm going, wait a minute, you know, what's wrong with this picture here?
And right.
And the thing of it is, nobody was addressing the issues. Nobody was bringing it up. Nobody was having that conversation. If she had said, you know, I'm not feeling, I feel horrible, and this is why, or this is why I think it might be, or whatever. And he would say, well, let's talk about that some more. That would have at least opened the doors to dialogue. And then if they needed further help, there is help available outside. But still,
right.
It gives them a starting point.
And a lot of what I see is that it just goes on and goes on and goes on. And then when it does get brought up, it gets brought up from this I've had enough. It's like I've been pushed into the corner and I'm just going to take out everything in my path because I'm done. Whereas if it were addressed a little bit earlier, and what I do all the time, in fact, I was actually talking to a client the other day, and I actually had a three-way conversation that I had with my husband over something, and they said, you actually said it that way? I said, yeah, because we have a pattern of not letting stuff sit. So I wasn't terribly emotionally upset or invested in it. I was actually very calm, which is what I try to tell people. But if I've been holding this in for so long and finally, you know, it's kind of like something has let the dam burst and now suddenly I've just flooded you with it, now I might not get a great reaction from my husband.
Exactly. And which is, again, exactly what you said. You need to address this early. I know in my own marriage, my husband and I, you know, like I said, you know, it was peaceful and amicable. We just grew apart. We had nothing more in common, and we didn't talk about it. We buried. Historically, we buried everything, and that was our way of dealing, you know, having, you know, whether it was trying to not be like our parents' relationships or whatever, you know, that's another story, but, you know.
It always is.
It always is. But, you know, you don't know. And that's why knowing yourself, getting back to the key of knowing yourself and your values has to do with being able to open up the discussions and say, this is important to me, and this is why it's important to me, and being able to talk about it.
So what do you see as the things that get in the way most often of women doing that? Are there any common things that you see that women have to address in order to be able to say, yeah, it's okay for me to figure out who I am and do things that are good for me?
One thing I learned along the way, and this is just, again, personal experience and research, is you can't be afraid. You cannot be outcome-based. You have to be present-minded and just really just say, this is important to me. And, you know, you stay in a calm situation, a calm place, like you have been explaining.
Mm-hmm.
But don't be outcome-based about it. You can't go and say, well, I might lose my marriage or I might do this. I mean, again, in my own experience, I was very afraid of the D word. It happened anyway.
Right.
You know? I mean, even though I fought it and screamed, you know, it happened.
Years ago, in one of my very first jobs, I was going to work for somebody, and my husband was helping me move into the office, and the doctor happened to be there, and he said to my husband, he goes, thank you so much for letting Leslie come work for us. And he looks at me later, and he goes, when have I ever let you do anything? because we didn't have it wasn't me asking permission kind of thing. It was, we support each other in healthy ways. Right now my husband and I are having this on again, off again discussion about whether or not I will support him having a motorcycle, but that's, you know, it's like, yeah.
Well, you have the safety issues there.
I'm struggling
there.
With that one. But, well, exactly. But so I think that it's worth examining. There might be truth to the fear, but I think if we don't actually bring out that fear and examine it, we don't really know if that's true.
That's right. We don't. And a lot of times our fear, again, it comes from places in our past, or it comes from the fear of the unknown, which is the anxiety. It comes from just fears of, you know, it's stepping out of your comfort zone, even in tiny little steps and testing the water. Sometimes that's all it takes. You don't have to, just because you have this big thing you want to try doesn't mean you have to approach it all at one big splash. You can just go and say, you know, what would you think if I did this?
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of test the waters a little bit and open the door for dialogue.
Right. And I think it's important to point out that what we're talking about isn't ignoring the needs of our children, but it's also not about ignoring our own needs.
That's
right. I always talk about, is it needs versus wants? So when you were talking about not going on that trip with your husband, it was because you had a need and your son had a need and your husband had a want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically.
And so it's
so,
trying
it's
trying to figure out what's a need versus what's a want. And I understand that that's probably something you help your clients with.
Oh my goodness, my clients will all vouch for the fact that I am such a proponent on self-care. I like to quote all the time, and I don't know if my own quote or whatever, but the caregiver can never properly take care of yourself or can take care of others until you take care of yourself. For example, and again, I use this analogy of the airplane. You know, what is it that the flight attendant says when they put your mask on yourself first, then you go and you share it with the people around you, you know? And it's the same thing. You've got to take care of yourself. You've got to feed your own soul. And it's not selfish. It's self-care. You are just as worthy as anybody else of the self-care and love that you would give anybody else.
Can you tell the listeners where they can find you and learn more about finding their authentic self?
Yeah. My website is www.envisionpossibility. That's envisionpossibility.com. My email address is envisionpossibility@gmail.com. I have a Facebook page called Envision Possibility as well, and you can connect with me through there as well. And I would be happy to give any other information, and if there's something, you know, and I also give a lot of support too. I have a lot of resources and other connections and information that I'm happy to share.
Well, great. And I love the envision possibility. I think that's just a terrific thing. And again, you aren't more important or less important than anybody else. You are equally important. And if you don't claim that place, nobody else is going to give it to you. So if this conversation has resonated with you, I invite you to stop putting yourself last right this minute and don't ever do it again. It may feel a little uncomfortable, but I guarantee you that once you let yourself be you on a regular basis, you are going to be happier, and therefore your family is going to be happier and stable. So until next time, stay loving.